How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. It is a huge week in the industry. We got tons of stuff to talk about, as we do every Sunday here on the Sports Byline USA Network. We're going to be talking about the death of one of the biggest stars of the 60s and 70s, King Curtis Iaukea. Has passed away, huge star in Hawaii, Japan, Australia, New Zealand, United States, all over the world. We'll talk about his life and times and his, the final days of his career as he worked as the head of the Dungeon of Doom in WCW. Some of you younger fans probably remember that. Kevin Sullivan thought he'd be a great mouthpiece for the Dungeon of Doom, and that's up to everyone else to decide. But we'll talk about his career. It was much, much more than the Dungeon of Doom. That's coming up later on in this show. UFC Fight Night and Strike Force took place last night, going head-to-head. We'll talk about both shows. Some positives and negatives to both events, particularly the Strike Force show. I really like the Strike Force show, but man, they have got a lot of things they need to work on. We'll talk about that later on. TNA Final Resolution is also tonight. Don't really expect a lot of people to be purchasing this pay-per-view, but we'll run it down for all of you, and for those of you that purchase it, or those of you that do not, Dave Meltzer will be doing live running commentary on the show at WrestlingObserver.com, starting as soon as this show goes off the air. It's free on the front page at WrestlingObserver.com, so make sure you check that out. The hearing, Chael Sonnen, testosterone replacement therapy. There is a lot to talk about here. We watched the entire hearing. It was over 3 hours long. It revealed a lot about drugs in MMA, the California State Athletic Commission, UFC, and Chael Sonnen, actually. We'll talk about that on this program as well. The King of the Ring was this past Monday night. We have a new king, Sheamus. Where is that likely leading? We'll talk about that. Plus, the Slammies coming up next week. Shawn Michaels heading back to WWE for at least a very short period of time. Talk about NXT. We've got a winner. Mick Foley talking about leaving TNA. And a lot more. Didn't even have time to get over it all here in this short preview. So getting into the news after the break. Lots to talk about. Stick around for that. 2 hours of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. There's tons of stuff to get into today, but going to start off with the death of King Curtis Iaukea, alleged to be one of the best promos in all of professional wrestling in the 70s. And Mike, tell us a little bit about his life.
Yeah, you know, I'm being a little bit younger. I came around at a time where I saw King Curtis Iaukea in ICW with Joseph Oldie's promotion, because we used to get that TV. And then I, as manager of the Samoans and I think Kamala in WWF, and is in the Dungeon of Doom. And if you just look at that, you look at these, you know, he would cut these incredible promos of just usually talking about nonsense. He'd start off, and Mean Gene would stick the mic in his face, and he'd start to growl and start to talk about Kamala, and then would like go off into like the 17 stars came to me, and it was all this. It was kind of bizarre because you didn't really know the background of Iaukea. But when you look back in history at everything he did and the characters that he played and the feuds that he had, he was an incredibly huge, huge, huge star, especially in like Australia and in New Zealand. He was a massive, massive star there, and was able to parlay that into some acting gigs. I mean, he was, as you said, supposedly one of the best promos in history, and was just an incredibly menacing, you know, bloodthirsty character in the same vein of the Sheik. And he feuded and teamed with Mark Lewin, who was another great. Played another great psycho character from over the years. A lot of influence there. It influenced Kevin Sullivan in Florida, and it was a lot of what he did with Dusty Rhodes and his devil gimmick probably was spawned from that. So he had an incredibly powerful, you know, pretty serious career. He was the third ever WWF Tag Team Champions with Baron Mikel Scaluna. They beat Carl Gotch and Rene Goulet in the early 70s, so he was a guy that was a major heel and a major name for a long time. And like I said, probably that into some acting gigs, and was a very influential person.
You know, he allegedly once did the promo, I guess it would have been in Hawaii, where he went out there and he didn't say a word. He had his back to the camera, and then he slowly turned around and stared into the camera and never said a single thing and still drew a sellout. That was a legend. And it's kind of funny because today I was reading an interview that Funaki did, of all people. And he was talking about how WWE told Kai and Tai to do that one time where we're going to give you all the mic and you guys just hold the mic and don't say anything. And I thought, you know, I would guess that Curtis Iaukea probably was more successful at that gimmick than Kai and Tai, for example. But yeah, a huge star all over the world. And I believe was a played a heel in a Three Stooges short as well, which is something that I must get my hands on because it sounds awesome. But that's King Curtis Iaukea. We'll talk about him a little bit more in the next couple of weeks and on Wrestling Observer Radio as well. Dave talked a lot about it last night on the program. So if you're a subscriber, head over and listen to that show. And I'm sure he's got a bio in the Observer that's coming out this coming Wednesday as well. Last night was a big night of mixed martial arts. Should probably kick off with that. The Ultimate Fighter finale, running head-to-head with Strikeforce in St. Louis. And it was interesting in the sense that it was a low-level UFC event. It was a high-level Strikeforce event. The Strikeforce show, in terms of action, I would say, was a far superior show. In terms of star power, probably a superior show as well. We're talking about a UFC show here that was essentially headlined by Stefan Bonner, which he faced a man named Igor Pokryuk, who had a terrible record. He had one win over James Irvin. That was his only win of note. All of his other fights, he either lost or he beat men who nobody had ever heard of before. And he was headlining against Stefan Bonner here. Stefan ended up going to a decision with Igor. The announcers really tried to put it over as a big step up in the career of Stefan Bonner. I don't know. Normally use the term, I don't know what they were smoking, but in this situation, if Rogan was smoking, I know exactly what it was. And that led us to the main event, which was the finals of Ultimate Fighter Season 12. Jonathan Brookins beat Michael Johnson. Michael Johnson absolutely, utterly destroyed him in the first round. Arguably, it was en route to being stopped, but Brookins survived, and he made his big comeback in round two, out-grappled Johnson for two straight rounds, ended up getting the decision. So, Jonathan Brookins, your Season 12 winner, most likely heading to the 145-pound division, and perhaps at some point a championship rematch against Jose Aldo Jr. Hopefully, he'll do better than he did last time, although he did all right last time, quite frankly. So, Mike, look it up and down, the Ultimate Fighter show. What were your thoughts on the program?
Well, in a way, Brookins kind of, if you can get a feel-good story out of the Ultimate Fighter at the end, in a way, he kind of did it. Because he was, you know, the one with all the, you know, the nonsense that went on with Koscheck and the medic stuff and, you know, making fun of Nam Phan for, you know, whacking it in the shower and all of that stuff. Brookins, you know, the show leading into this, you know, really concentrated on how he, you know, he liked everyone but didn't want to bother anyone. He's fine being off on his own. He seems to, you know, the art of martial arts and you know, and being just seemingly a very genuinely good guy seemed to come out. And to have him win the show, I thought was kind of, you know, in some ways karmatic too, because, you know, my wife, who usually does not, you know, watch the Ultimate Fighter consistently, and I had a friend of mine's wife who's the same way, both got into him, and by the end of the show, he was the one that they ended up liking, and were incredibly happy that he won last night. So if you get a chance to get a feel-good, you know, out of that show, that's what it was. The show, the rest of the show was, you know, basically kind of flat. I don't think the Maya Grove fight was really any surprise whatsoever, and there wasn't a whole lot of action on it. Nam Phan and Leonard Garcia had a lot of action, a lot of bad action, I thought, on Garcia's end, and then what ended up being a really bad decision, which, you know, kind of really hurt from the start of the show, having such a great fight and then having such a poor, poor decision.
Yeah, the judging and, well, really everything, the judging, the commissions, it all ties together in what would be the top story of this week. We'll I don't really even know how to approach the entire story. There are so many things to talk about, but I guess we'll start with the Nam Pham fight here, and then we'll, I guess, segue into the trial, I guess, if you want to call it that, of Chael Sonnen, and we'll get into Strikeforce a little bit later on. May as well jump into this right now. The fight, the Garcia-Nam Pham fight, ended up going to the judges, and essentially it was a close first round, it was a close third round, and Nam Pham destroyed him in round two. So, you watch the fight, and I think most people probably felt that Nam Pham won the fight. Well, judges disagreed. They gave it to Leonard Garcia. Apparently, two of the judges thought that Garcia won the first round and the third round. And since nobody likes to give a 10-8 round, they felt that Nam, when he destroyed Garcia in round two, only deserved a 10-9. And so, therefore, Garcia got the win. And this led to Joe Rogan losing his mind on the Nevada State Athletic Commission and Keith Kaiser, and he talked about how these stupid decisions were killing the sport and how fans didn't understand it. This was not UFC's fault. It was the fault of the commission, and how Keith Kaiser didn't think that there was any sort of problem whatsoever, and he personally, Rogan, felt there was a problem. He said, clearly there are a couple of good judges, but there are, quote, a bunch of incompetent morons that don't know a thing about the sport. Now, granted,
well, and not only did that after the fight, did that through 2.5 rounds of the Story Hendricks fight.
Yeah. And you know, the thing is here,
he's right.
Well, he is right, but to me, it's kind of like, if you're a judge and you're one of these guys petrified, you're petrified to give a 10-8. You're scared. You're scared to give a 10-8 or a 10-10. If you're one of those guys and you realize that to keep your job, you got to toe the line and give out 10 nines, then the first round was close. Last round was close. If you really want to give it to a 10-9 to Garcia for both of those rounds, and you're too scared to give a 10-8 for round two, then you know what? You can make an argument that Garcia won this fight. But you have to be a judge who is petrified to give a 10-8 and a 10-10. Now, when I judged this, I gave the first round a 10-10. Gave the second round a 10-8 for Pham, and it didn't really even matter what the last round was. Nam won the fight. I'm going to get your scorecard after the break, and we'll talk about this in depth. There's a lot of stuff to talk about. So, coming up in a moment, Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline, Radio Network. Back here on Wrestling Observer Live, Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. Joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Got my dander up there in the last segment. Almost overshot my target there. Talking about the Nam Pham Leonard Garcia fight and the judging of that fight. And as I noted before we went to commercial break, I had scored the first round a 10-10. I'd scored the second round a 10-8 for Pham. And third round, again, it doesn't matter who you gave it to. It was a close round. 10-9 either way, Nam Pham still wins the fight. So, I don't know. There's like an argument that we were having on our message board before this show even began, where people were talking about scoring and how the California State Athletic Commission is going to be experimenting with a new judging system, MMA-specific. I prefer MMA scoring-specific, which would be MMASS, perfect way to describe this system here. But it involves half points, and in the case of a draw or whatever, you look at things like takedowns or X number of points and near submissions or X number of points. And I was just looking at this going, this is so stupid. Because the problem is, number one, the judges are completely incompetent. The judges don't know what they're doing for the most part. And now your idea is to give them a scoring system that is even more complicated. Why would you do that? Do you not understand what the problem is going in? And as far as half points go, whenever I hear half points, I am just filled with rage. Because what is a half point? What do you need a half point for in a 10-point must system? You have a half point because people are petrified petrified to give a 10-8. They are so scared to give a 10-8 that the solution is we're going to split full points in half. So you don't have to give a 10-8. Instead, you can give a 10-9 and a 10-9.5. You never have to give a 10-8. All this is it's allowing people to still be scared of using more of the 10-point must system. There's nothing wrong with the 10-point must system. The 10-point must system is not a problem. The way that people use the 10-point must system is a problem. The idea of the winner gets 10 points and the loser gets 9 or less. Okay, that's great if that's what you actually do, but nobody actually does that. The loser does not get 9 or less. The loser almost always gets 9. The number of judges that will actually give a 10-8 is so rare that you may as well not even have a 10-point must system. You may as well have a 2-point must system. The winner gets 2 points, the loser gets 1. You don't give anybody a 0. That's essentially what they're doing right now. So this was like a picture-perfect example of why this system is so bad, and all you have to do to make the system work is to use all of your points. If you've got a round, like the first round of this fight, where you go, you know, I don't know who won that fight. I think Nam won that fight, but you know what? I'm going to go back and see if I can make an argument for Leonard Garcia winning the fight. Okay, you know what? If the round is so close, then you're going to go back and decide if you can make a case for the other guy, and maybe you can, okay? If the round is that close, it's a draw. It's an even round. Just give it a 10-10. If you watch a round and a guy beats the other guy, you know, he doesn't destroy the guy, but it's pretty clear that guy won the round, okay? That's a 10-9. If you go in there and a guy just dominates the other guy, and he just dominates him the entire round like Nam Pham did in the second round to Leonard Garcia, that's a 10-8. It was domination. That's a dominant round. If you have a round where it's so close to being stopped that you sit there and you go, man, I can't believe the ref didn't stop that fight. Or man, if I were in that ref's shoes, I'd have stopped that fight. That's a 10-7. Now, these four things are four things that you'd have to be a complete moron not to be able to figure these things out. Was it too close to call? Did one guy win? Did one guy destroy the other dude? Did one guy almost finish? Okay, if you can't make a distinction between those four things, you really shouldn't be refereeing. Now, granted, most of these guys shouldn't be refereeing anyway, but I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt here. If you're too stupid to figure out these four things, you should not be refereeing. And if you can watch a fight and watch around and look at a fight like this and go, you know what? First round, too close to call. Second round, Nam dominated this fool. That's a 10-8. Third round, Leonard Garcia won. Barely. 10-9. The right guy wins the fight. This is not that hard to figure out. But instead, they've got to try and come up with a new system that is overcomplicating things. Listen, I realize the judges don't add up the scores. The commission does. Okay, it doesn't matter who is adding up the scores. In the last couple of months, there have been two times where I have been reporting on a score that was read on TV, and Dave Meltzer's popped in and went, oh, wait, no, that was wrong. And I'm like, huh? And he's like, yeah, I got the scorecards. They added wrong. They added wrong? They're adding wrong with full numbers. And now your idea is you're going to add half points. You're going to add up like a 9.5 and an 8. Good luck with that. So why make this more difficult? Why make it a deal where if it gets close, you've got to go, oh, well, who had more takedowns? Who came close on a submission? You think these idiots judges know what a close submission actually is? No. You're going to have a guy that throws his legs up in the air haphazardly, and one of your idiot judges is going to go, oh, man, he was close on a submission right there. No, you know what? He wasn't. He wasn't even close to a submission. But now you're adding this thing right here where the judge is going to have to determine whether a submission was close or not. That's going to screw everything up. You're going to have a judge decide whether, you know, a takedown should be 2 points or not, or whatever the deal might be. All you're doing is making this more difficult for stupid people. You have to simplify this. The most simple thing would be have a whole fight and then have the judge go, who won? When you look at this fight, who do you think won the fight? Who was the victor in this fight? That's the easy way to do this. But no, they're gonna use a system here. They're gonna try out this system that just makes the whole thing more difficult. So anyway, as you can probably tell, I'm really down on the judging, and last night just hammered home how bad this stuff is. And I fully 100% agree with Joe Rogan, and I'm glad he cut that promo on the Nevada State Athletic Commission on the show, because clearly they don't get it.
I don't see. This is my great revenge as a boxing fan to give to all the MMA people who, you know, more like, yeah, why is MMA so much better than boxing? Well, there's lots of reasons that are why, but one of the reasons that would always get brought up was the judging. It's like, you know, well, do you listen to the boss of your favorite company, Dana White, when he says he doesn't want to deal with drug testing? He wants the state to do that. He doesn't assign referees or judges. The states do that. They say it over and over again, and you'd think that you would actually get into people's heads that this isn't the UFC's fault. One of the saddest parts is Joe Rogan having to fight so hard because, maybe we're in a bubble too much, and you forget about how many people there are out there that think this is like the UFC's fault, that there are bad decisions. It's not. And we saw this with Kael Sonnen this week. This is just how it works. In England and a lot of places, there's many times where the referee makes the call on who won a fight. Why do we need three judges at ringside anyway? And again, why do we need a 10-point must system if you're not going to use more than what it is? And why would you add in half points to people that don't know what they're doing anyway? And even if they did know what they were doing and are being, you know, it's being pressed against them to not give 10-8 rounds or give 10-10 rounds when it's close, well, you know, that's the people that actually put them in these positions, which are the state athletic commissions.
I was petrified last night when Dave was explaining the idea in California is they're going to monitor judges. Now, on the surface, that sounds like a good thing. We're going to find out which of these judges is an idiot. Well, here's the problem. In this fight here, in the second round, two judges scored a 10-9 and one judge scored a 10-8. Now, to me, that's a 10-8 round. You completely dominated this dude. That's a 10-8. Well, guess what? When they see that two judges gave a 10-9 and one judge gave a 10-8, you know what that means? That means a judge that gave a 10-8, he must be incompetent. So when you've got a pool of judges and the majority of these judges are idiots and you throw in some competent judges, guess who's going to be weeded out when you're monitoring judges to see who's falling out of line? You're going to get rid of the guys that have a clue. We're going to be stuck with a bunch of either we're going to be stuck with a bunch of incompetent judges, A, or the competent judges are going to go, I thought that was a 10-8, but you know what? These two idiots are going to give it a 10-9. So therefore, I better give this a 10-9. And we're going to have a bunch of every single one of these judges is going to be either an idiot or scared to be anything other than an idiot. How does that help? What is wrong with things being progressive? What is wrong with change? I've never understood that. I know that it's ingrained in people to be afraid of change. I know that just like naturally people kind of fear change. But to me, it's like, you know, if things are going well, then yeah, I can see change being a little bit scary. But when things are so obviously messed up, why are you so afraid to change things? Why are people so afraid to get rid of this 10-point must system? This isn't boxing. Why are people afraid to create a scoring system that's not a boxing scoring system for mixed martial arts?
Brian, they don't do it in boxing either, though. That's the thing. You can whip a man's ass, and a lot of times you're still only getting a 10-9 round.
But still, it's why do we need a 10-point must system in MMA?
Well, why do we need it all? Why isn't it out of five or something?
Why isn't it just who's better in the fight? Who won this fight? What's wrong with that? What is wrong with that?
Because no one's getting paid to have a job from a commission to have all of this nonsense. You have people, it's like people on a jury. You're asked to be there because you know nothing about what you're going to do. We have the same. We have boxing judges doing MMA, and we have the issue we had with the commission this week with steroids. It was ridiculous.
Actually, it's time to go to a break. But when we come back, let's talk about Chael Sonnen and the California State Athletic Commission and the circus that was his hearing a couple of days ago. That's something to look forward to after the break, as if we haven't ranted and raved enough here on this program. So it's coming up here in just a second, everybody. Stay tuned. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here to rant and rave about mixed martial arts and pro wrestling for the next hour and a half. For the latest news and info in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, if you love this show and you just want more, WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. Daily radio shows, everybody. A show every day. Actually, most days, more than one show a day. For example, doing two shows today, obviously, doing this one and another Wrestling Observer Live, Wrestling Observer Radio tomorrow night with Dave Meltzer. On Monday, I'll be talking Raw after Raw Monday night, obviously. And Tuesday, I've got Figure Four Daily, which is the interview show, talking to some of the biggest stars in the history of wrestling. And Tuesday night, Brian and Vinny Show, talking about Raw, SmackDown, and WWE 24/7. Anyway, shows every day. If you got a long commute, if you work out at the gym, if you basically anywhere you go that you normally listen to audio on your MP3 player, your iPod, your iPhone, your iPad, your Droid, your Android, which I believe are the same thing. I'm not sure. I don't have one. But regardless, wherever you listen to your audio, WrestlingObserver.com will provide you with more than you could possibly shake a stick at. We've got, as noted, 20, 25 radio shows every single week. We've got every show we've ever done archived for members. It's $10.99 a month. Gets you full access to everything. And our archives date back to 2005. We have thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of audio, thousands of radio shows up there. You just sign up. You get full access to everything. There's no extra fees. You don't have to sign up to get the new stuff and then pay more to get the archives. One fee, $10.99 a month, gets you access to everything. And we've had people attempt to go back and go through every single show we've ever done. I don't think anyone ever has. I don't even know if it's possible. I consider it like the Smithsonian. Spend your whole life, 24 hours a day, trying to go through all this stuff, and not sure you'd be able to do it without going nutty. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. And for wrestling fans, Dave Meltzer is going to be up immediately after this show talking the TNA pay-per-view. He'll be doing a live, ongoing play-by-play on the front page, and then the two of us will be up later on with a radio show running down all of that. We've also done shows all this weekend talking about Strikeforce, judging, mixed martial arts, UFC. We had a bunch of breaking news updates on Chael Sonnen, and let's talk about that situation right here, Mike. The Chael Sonnen deal, he went before the California State Athletic Commission. He managed to get his sentence cut in half. He can fight again in March. Testosterone replacement therapy, drugs, steroids, whole nine yards. What did you get out of this whole thing?
Well, I mean, do you even want to go into that or set it up with the semi-main event of Josh Barnett not really knowing why he was there in front of the commission?
Yeah, Josh Barnett failed a steroid test about a year and a half ago, I think. He waited a year, didn't bother going in and appealing, just sat out for a year, did a little bit of stuff in Japan, decided to get reinstated, went back. He had no counsel. They were like, you know, you have to have your counsel here. And he was like, huh? What? This was never explained to me.
But it looks over at the guy, you know, I might be able to match wits with him, but I'm not feeling too comfortable right now without my counsel, who I have, you know, had from the East Coast, you know, for just this very thing.
Keep in mind,
I don't know why they're not here, but
yeah,
I
keep
think
in mind
I should
get them. The last time Barnett was supposed to do this, he had to postpone because his counsel was snowed in. So now he came back and he didn't even bring him.
Which, hey, you know, it's hard to get flights sometimes, and that plays into, you know, the main event of Chael Sonnen, because we had a guy that needed to go get a flight at the end of all this.
Yeah, Chael Sonnen, he failed for steroids, testosterone, which actually, according to Chael Sonnen, is not a steroid, which was the argument that WWE used when Chris Benoit's levels were sky high after he killed his wife and family. But Chael, testosterone replacement therapy, claimed he'd been on it since 2009, made a lot of claims during this this deal in an attempt to get the suspension reduced, or actually, presumably, he wanted to get the suspension just you know, time already served, I guess, and get back into fighting. But he went in there. He claimed that he had hypogonadism. He claimed his gonads did not produce enough testosterone, and so he needed replacement therapy. Claimed
now,
that
I got to be honest. At first, I thought they had said hypergonadism, which I didn't think was a bad thing. I thought that was actually what Peter North suffers from.
Well, I just presuming from watching all of his videos that Chael had hypergonadism, but apparently not. He's got hypo. His gonads are not producing enough testosterone, you see. Because, according to Chael, he never went through puberty. Didn't really go into detail about what that even meant. But, yeah. So, he claimed that I went on this therapy starting in, I believe he said 2009. Said I'd fought before. I fought in Nevada. I had it cleared with Keith Kaiser. I thought I had it cleared here. I thought I talked to the right people. Apparently, I did not. I get shots every Tuesday and Thursday. I told them at the time I was being tested that I was on this stuff and what should I do? And they said, oh, go talk to so-and-so. So I did. I thought everything was fine, but apparently it was not. And suffice to say, a lot of holes in the story, not the least of which was the fact that Keith Kaiser, on the record, has stated, I have never spoken to Chael Sonnen in my life. So all of Sonnen's claims about having this cleared in Nevada with Keith Kaiser, well, apparently he hadn't, which has also led to Keith Kaiser saying that, you know, this man's license is up at the end of the year, and we ain't just going to license him. He's going to have to come in here and explain what the heck he's talking about with all this stuff involving me. So suffice to say, a lot of stuff going on right now with young Chael Sonnen, and I guess we'll see what happens if he gets licensed anytime soon, and what happens when he has to go in front of Kaiser.
He may want to just, like, put Jerry McDivitt on retainer to team him up with his lawyer, who was very good throughout most of what I had seen. yeah, that was probably the wrong person to forget talking to or, you know, come up with a story about talking to is, you know, the head of the Nevada Commission. But, I mean, there was a lot. I mean, you could pick off anything in what you just said and talk about it. I know some people who take testosterone replacement. Chael must have never went through puberty if he needs to have two shots a week for testosterone replacement. Now, with that said, he probably would have been getting it done far before 2008. There probably would have been a reason that, you know, if he had this done, he probably should have told somebody back then, because wouldn't this have appeared on something? I mean, wouldn't we have known at some... I mean, I guess we wouldn't know who the athletes are who get replacement, but I mean, wouldn't somebody, this wouldn't have even come up then if that was the case, because they would have looked at records from somewhere else, including from when he fought in California against Okami. So I just, there was a lot to this, and I know a lot of people were stunned at the ridiculousness, if that's a word, of the process, but that's the way that's the way these athletic commissions work. And oftentimes you have people on there, which was pretty obvious, that I don't think somebody has to go in there and be a doctor and be that well-schooled on steroids. But you should have a rudimentary knowledge of things like, you know, testosterone. You know, is testosterone a steroid? Yes. You know, this shouldn't be. I mean, you should at least have a rudimentary knowledge of it. And, again, it goes back to now the commissions again, where, again, we bash Texas for not having a commission and letting people like, you know, Margarito fight there, and letting Tommy Morrison, you know, rumored to have AIDS fight there, and all that other stuff that, you know, Texas does. But with that said, are commissions better? Yes. And even if they're not working properly, they're still better than having none. But is there a reason at this point, after all these years of seeing it happen to boxing, and now we're seeing it happen to MMA, that this doesn't, you know, somebody needs to be calling on the carpet a lot more?
Yeah,
Why was it cut to 6 months? And that was the bottom line of all of this, people.
Let me talk about the 6 months here before you get into this big rant about what happened there. The 6 month deal, I've heard a lot about this, and the deal was this. There were five guys on the panel that were going to decide Chael Sonnen's fate. And the thing went on for so long, like seemingly days, that all of a sudden, one of the guys had to leave to get a flight. Which, like, all right, this is a clown show. So he left. That left four guys. So now you've got four guys deciding the fate of Chael Sonnen. So first off, I was watching this thing, and it was like, you know, these people have, not only do they have no idea what they're doing as it regards, like, you know, steroids and that sort of thing, but when it came time to vote, they didn't even know what they were voting on. It was like, it had to be confirmed. So what are we doing here? Are we deciding what his punishment will be? What are we doing? So then it was explained to them. So then you got four people deciding whether his suspension should be reduced. So two guys vote no. It should remain 1 year. So one of the dudes, I think two of the dudes actually disagreed. So two guys agreed it should be upheld. Two guys thought that it should not be upheld. So then they're all like, and they're just stammering. And then one of the guys was like, well, how about 6 months? And then the two that wanted a year were like, well, we ain't going to get a year. So, okay, fine. We'll do 6 months. Then one of the other guys, you know, the fourth guy was like, no, I don't think it should even be 6 months. But three of them at least agreed on 6 months, and so that was your majority, and that's why he ended up getting a six-month sentence. But the point is, the guy that left to catch the plane, I don't know what he would have voted, but if he would have agreed that this should not have been cut to 6 months, then Chael would have got a year. That's the bottom line. So the whole thing was just a complete dog and pony show, and it was ridiculous to be cut in half. But that was just what that's what they had to do to get a majority, basically.
If they want to cut it out of the sport so bad, and they want to cut it out of all sports so bad, you go, you're either guilty or you're not. Well, I messed up on paperwork. I'm sorry. Maybe we take a month off, but tough. That's what you get. If you did that, you wouldn't have to worry about, oh, my God, should we have blood testing? Should we have this? Should we have that? Well, he was caught without blood testing. And either he was guilty and should have been put out for a year, or he was not. This is equivalent of suspending a pitcher 5 days for beating somebody or something like that. Well, he's going to go right back to his next regular start anyway. So what did you do? You know, 5 years ago, we saw James Toney in California go, do I look like I'm on steroids? And they cut his suspension from a year to 6 months, if I'm not mistaken. I believe that was either California or New York. I think it was California. That was only 5 years ago.
The whole deal that used to be a running joke with California was, if you are accused of, if you fail a test or you're accused of taking steroids, if you go in there and admit, I did it, I'm sorry, I was wrong, full suspension. If you went in there and just flat out said, I didn't do it, even if you had absolutely no evidence whatsoever, they would cut it in half. And it was ridiculous.
It's like the probation team in the movie Raising Arizona when they keep letting Nicolas Cage out. You sorry? Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, just absolutely amazing. It's just, yeah, again, beating on this so badly, but you know what? It needs to be beat on. The whole system needs to be beat on because it's incredibly, incredibly embarrassing. And again, MMA fans, especially now who have their dander up over this, if you don't want this to turn into boxing, then you do need to, I don't know what exactly can be done, but it does need to be hammered home a lot more. I guess Joe Rogan said go on your blogs and your Twitter and whatnot. I guess you could do that, but...
Email Nevada, he said, which actually in this case would do you no good. You need to email the California State Athletic Commission. But yeah, it was amazing to watch this meeting and see all of these people who had no idea what was going on. Like, no idea what was going on. When they went to ask Chael questions, it was like, I got a million great questions you can ask this fella. Nobody asked any of them. Because nobody even knew what questions to ask. You know what I mean? There was like one guy, the doctor on the panel, he saw through some thick BS. And he had some real good questions. And you could tell that he wasn't buying Chael's story at all. Rest of them, no clue. One of the guys, Chael was so good that the guy just fell for it hook, line, and sinker. And was like, this man should get off. This is an injustice. But luckily, the other guys didn't feel that way. We got to head to a break. Back in just a moment talking more. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, talking Chael Sonnen. And Mike, what did you think of Chael Sonnen's doctor?
I think, was it you the one who said it was like Roddy Piper on a bad day? I mean, as good as, I mean, the lawyer was hitting back and, was shooting at the commission, and is this a trial? Then looking over and hitting the guy, from the commission with questions. It was just, he was very good. Then it went into his doctor, who, he wasn't the doctor that Scott Steiner and Buff Bagwell had in the NWO days on Nitro, but he might as well have been, because I don't think he helped his case at all.
No, it was like, Bruno Sammartino's been on our show a few times, and they're working on a movie about his life. And he was approached about doing a film with another company, and he read the script, and he was just appalled. They'd added all this stuff, like his mom, who, they were up in the mountains during World War II, and she had to walk down to the hill and risk her life, and she was actually shot at one point to get food for the kids. And he was appalled that they added this part about how she'd had a romance, and he was like, "What are you doing all this for?" And they said, "Well, we've got to Hollywoodize your life." And that's when he just ended the whole thing, and he said, "If you got to Hollywoodize my life, then my life story ain't worth telling." And to me, that doctor was like, this was like a movie was made of this hearing, and they decided they needed to Hollywoodize it by bringing in this, whatever this doctor was of Chael Sonnen. I mean, this guy, it was like, this was like a guy out of a movie. He was, he came in, he wasn't wearing a suit. He was wearing, like, a t-shirt. He may have been wearing sweatpants, for all I know. He was chewing gum. He looked like he had absolutely no idea what was going on. It was like, this is a Hollywood version of this Chael Sonnen story right here, of how this all went wrong for Chael. It's just, like, incredible. So, for those of you that haven't seen it, I believe if you go to the California State Athletic Commission website, the video may be up right now, so you can check it out and either have a good laugh or have a hearty cry about this whole deal. So we're pretty much done talking about this. When we come back, we'll recap Strike Force from last night and get into the TNA show, which is coming up tonight, Final Resolution. So it's coming up in just a moment after the top of the hour news break, listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live, here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as always by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. And very quickly in this segment, before we head to break, I'm going to get Mike's overall thoughts on last night's Strikeforce event, and then when we come back, we'll go into it in a little more detail. So, Mike, bring us up to speed. Strikeforce in St. Louis.
Well, in a way, it's, for all the bad stuff that happened to this show, it was, really a success for them in the fact that they did have the most action of the night. At least they had that going for them, some real highlight, real knockouts. But, this was a show that they couldn't, talk CBS into having. Then Herschel Walker gets hurt. Then I forget who it was that pulled off against Bigfoot Silva. But, at the end of the day, they ended up having the most entertaining action-packed show with just some serious, serious highlight reel knockouts, and actually a pretty exciting opener, even though it was quite sloppy to begin with, and we'll talk about it after the break. But, Matt Lindland should probably just stick to managing Chael Sonnen.
He has a bad night for Matt Lindland. Bad night for a lot of guys, actually, but I enjoyed
maybe
the strike.
Maybe even a bad night for Dana White, too, because, I don't know if Paul Daly is going to come back to bite them. Obviously, it's not like anybody's major competition, but I wonder if he had simmered down a little bit before firing him, if he maybe should have put him on an extended suspension.
I don't think it matters much either way. I mean, that fight was tailor-made for him to knock out Scott Smith, which he did in dominant fashion. We're going to talk about all the fights here in detail. I will say very quickly that I enjoyed last night's show. I want to get that out of the way first. I really like last night's Strikeforce event. I'm a fan of quick knockouts, quick submissions, and that sort of thing. And, I enjoyed the opener and the main event on the Ultimate Fighter finale, but the rest of the show was kind of a snoozer in some ways to me. But Strikeforce was a very dynamic event. I liked it in that sense. But there are a lot of things about Strikeforce that I want to talk about after the break as far as what I feel should be, some things that I think need to be remedied, because I don't want to see Strikeforce become the TNA of mixed martial arts. And some of the things they do, it appears they could be heading down that path. So we'll talk about that when we come back from the break. And we'll talk about TNA. How about that? Listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We'll get into the TNA pay-per-view coming up here in a bit. But first off, Strike Force from St. Louis last night, a night of quick knockouts. If you're a big fan of those, this was your night. The last three fights in a row. Would like to apologize right now to Mauro Ranallo. I screwed up. I misheard what he said about three fights in a row with three memorable knockouts. I thought he was talking about Dan Henderson's career. He was actually talking about this show, and he was 100% correct. Dan Henderson knocked out Babalu Sobral very, very quickly. Paul Daly killed Scott Smith very, very quickly. And Robbie Lawler, in 49 seconds, knocked out Matt Lindland. Three awesome knockouts in a row. Earlier on in the show, Antonio Silva beat Mike Kyle in the second round via knockout. And in the first round, we had Ovince St. Preux, who had just fought 15 days earlier, he beat Benji Raddick via decision. It was a night of action and fun and excitement. However, I don't know, Mike. Strikeforce, to me, it's just like, is it too much of the boxing model? Is that what the problem is here? What do you think?
Oh, see, I thought you were going to say it's too much of the TNA model because they think too much about another promotion where they could have their own OSP.
Well, yeah. Now, the thing to me there were three things on this show that got my dander up. Two of them in a major way, one of them in kind of a minor way. First one was, they've got a show coming up on January 29th. Strikeforce runs A shows and B shows. So similar to UFC, there would be, say, a UFC pay-per-view and a UFC fight night. So imagine if on next week's UFC pay-per-view with George St. Pierre and Josh Koscheck, imagine if on that show they said, we've got a fight night coming up in 2 weeks with Stefan Bonner facing Igor Pokryuk or whatever. And we've got a pay-per-view coming up on January 1st, and it's also going to be a big show. And they had no main event, no undercard, nothing. I mean, can you imagine if that happened? So Strikeforce came on the air here, and they're plugging their January 29th show, which is their next major event. They do have a B show with Tyrone Woodley, coming up that nobody's going to watch. Most of those B shows do about 200,000, 250,000 viewers. So they plug that event. But then their next big event, their next Strikeforce main show is January 29th, and they said, and I quote, it'll be another big show. No main event, no undercard. I mean, how is this done? How does this happen that you've got a major show? And on that show, when you plug your next major show, you don't even have a main event. How does that happen?
That's, I guess, just the position they're in. I mean, but even if they had a main event, one of the things that's been tough for me sometimes, I mean, Showtime shows a lot of ringed activity, which is great, and they do hit on all that stuff to Super 6, and they mention all their shows coming up. But like with the interview segments, trying to get, they don't spend time on interviews of hyping up the next show. And even if they did have a main event set up, I mean, that's always troubling. They never hammer it home enough. They never give you enough reason to think this is the next big thing coming up. And it's just, yeah, I'm surprised they don't have a main event for it either, at least an idea of one, of who they're going to have on there, and they could have interviewed them or did some hyping up of just Strikeforce in general in one of those interviews, but they didn't. I mean, they had plenty of time to, too, where, I mean, my God, I know they could have rushed to put Dexter on. I know it's a big show for Showtime, but you had a lot of extra time. You could have used that half hour. And there were no names on the undercard. That's true. I'm surprised they didn't have more highlight packages or video packages. Just doing something more to hype up Strikeforce.
Undercards. I mean, you have to do it. I mean, the example I used on Observer Radio last night was Cody McKenzie, the dude from Ultimate Fighter, the skinny dude from Alaska who doesn't look like much, but he's won now. Actually, he's won 11 straight professional fights, but if you count the two that he won on Ultimate Fighter before he lost in the TKO to Nam Pham, he has won the last 13 fights that he has won have been via guillotine. That is unprecedented, I would actually say, that a man has used a finishing move successfully for 13 straight fights. But anyway, the point was, he was not on the main card on the UFC event last night. But on the undercard, he went in and he guillotined another dude. So when they had a little extra time on the Ultimate Fighter finale, they took that fight and they put it on the air. Now, guess who's a little bit more over than he was going in? Cody McKenzie. Because sometimes dudes look good on the undercard. Sometimes you see an awesome knockout on the undercard. Sometimes the best submission of the show is on the undercard. So air them. Try to get some guys over. Strikeforce's big deal is they don't have any stars. They don't have really anybody that people see as like a maybe Fedor, you know. Dan Henderson, I guess, you know, he was the biggest star on the show last night. But you need to make some stars. You need to make some guys that your average casual fan recognizes. You start doing that by finding guys doing awesome things and putting those things on TV. So yeah, when the show goes off the air an hour early, this was scheduled to be a 2.5-hour show, went off the air an hour early and they had nothing. Not a single undercard, not a single highlight, not a single great knockout, nothing. Is just astounding. What it's just a waste. It is like a waste of time to have that window and to go off the air early. What a waste of time. You've been given that as a gift.
Not like any of those fights on the undercard went all to decision or something like that either. I mean, there were at least, what, 3 knockout finishes in the first or second round on the undercard of that fight you could have shown.
Are those undercard guys like dudes that are never going to get a chance in Strikeforce?
Well, in Strikeforce, I mean, on Challenger shows, I'm sure a couple of them have probably been on already. But, I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, yes, they're all no-names. But at least, I mean, that's the one thing MMA has been able to be successful about when it comes to pay-per-view over boxing, is that when dudes were getting laid out on quick, you know, it wasn't, okay, these 4 fights are over or 3 fights now are over and that's all we had, peace out. And then, you're scaring at a blank screen for an hour. The UFC had the, foresight and for whatever reason it was, they give you 7 fights, or 8 fights. I mean, one time on pay-per-view, it was like all but 1 or something like that, that they aired the undercard on. This is the same thing. Use your time. Put 3 guys on there because, maybe a knockout was so impressive, somebody may want to watch them on a Challenger show and watches them again if they get a win there and they watch them on a Showtime show. I mean, what would be the harm in that? I mean, again, did Dexter have to come on for the East Coast at least that fast?
It was on here, too, by the way, the West Coast. You know, the other thing that this is kind of a nitpick, but they do this all the time. I realize that there's certain phrases that have become that they're just used in MMA because they're used in UFC, and UFC is the premier brand. And so I guess everybody else figures that they have to copy these sayings and these phrases and that sort of thing. But I am so sick of hearing so-and-so in Strikeforce is now in the mix. Listen,
everybody's in the mix in Strikeforce.
Exactly. The roster is so thin that everybody is in the mix. Getting a win does not put you in the mix in Strikeforce. Being in Strikeforce puts you in the mix. And when you say that, so-and-so is now in the mix after this win, all that does is remind fans that there's no talent in this company. I shouldn't say there's no talent. I apologize for that. All it does is tell people that the talent pool is extremely thin. That's all it does. You know, because the booking of this Strikeforce is so haphazard. You know, when you've got 240 guys under contract like UFC does, at every fight someone is at risk of being cut. You know, on every show there are going to be dudes that are probably going to get cut because you got so many guys. Yes, you've got a mix. Yes, you can talk about if so-and-so beats so-and-so and so-and-so beats so-and-so, those two guys are going to fight and the winner's going to get a championship match. That's all great. Those dudes are in the mix. In Strikeforce, wins and losses don't matter. The talent pool is so thin. You know, whenever they talk about we're going to concentrate on the heavyweight division, what does that mean? You don't need to concentrate on any division because there's a lack of talent in every single division you've got. All you can do is do the best you can and try and do just a slight bit of logical booking. And I granted, I feel for them because it's hard to do with a limited number of fighters. But still, you've got to try. And in the mix just drives me nuts. We'll talk about this more after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. I'm killing myself on this show today, Mike. Yelling and screaming and ranting. I need to calm down. And probably not going to help when we talk about TNA. So, yeah. I apologize to everybody for this. Unless you're a big fan, in which case, you're welcome.
Some people love your ranting and raving.
Any other thoughts on Strikeforce before we go into the TNA Final Resolution pay-per-view? And again, everybody, I really liked Strikeforce last night. I don't want them to become the TNA of MMA. I want them to be a valid, viable number two promotion. And they've got to fix some things in order to get to that point.
Dan Henderson back in the mix after a rematch from 10 years ago.
Back in the mix. Yeah.
Well, does the thought of Cookie suspended in a shark cage 25 feet above the ring make you feel any more calm?
It makes me even more angry.
I'm sorry. Oh. What about a casket match between Abyss and the Pope?
Just infuriates me.
Okay, my last thing. How about Matt Morgan in a main event that he lost last month?
Actually, you know what? You didn't even hit on the thing that infuriates me the most. I'm going to tell everybody what that was. So, I'm not a big fan of Impact, everybody. In fact, I generally think that it's a horrendous television show, one of the worst of all time. Although, I was actually thinking about this the other day. So, like last night, there were two MMA shows. And, you know, 5-6 hours of MMA that I had to watch, and then I had to do a show with Dave, and Dave actually fell asleep during Ultimate Fighter, and so when I called to do the show, he was actually only halfway into Ultimate Fighter, so I was up till 3:30 in the morning last night. Well, the point was, I knew that I was in for a real long night, so I was going to relax a little bit in the afternoon and just watch some TV, which I never do, and I'm flipping through the channels, and you know, my wife is a big fan of some of the stuff on E, you know? And anyway, the point of my story is, I was watching some non-wrestling, non-MMA programming yesterday, and there was a lot of horrendous, horrendous television. Like, shows that I actually cannot believe that they get even one viewer. Like, with TNA, I can understand their loyal fan base. I mean, if you're a fan of pro wrestling and you're really disgruntled by WWE and you can accept that this show is just a booking disaster, then I can understand why you would like watching Impact. Some of these other shows on TV, I can't imagine, like, a single person in the entire world watching these shows. So anyway, the conclusion that I came to is, if you're a person that regularly watches other things on television, like some of these just horrendous cable shows, then I can imagine why you would not understand why you think that Impact is so stupid. Because really, in the grand scheme of programming on television, Impact is not the worst show in the world. With that said, as a wrestling show, it's usually awful. So I'm watching it the other night, and I'm not hating it. And in fact, there are a couple of things that I really like. I thought the fist pump challenge, I'll let you talk about that in a second, I thought that was really good. And there was a segment with Bubba Ray and D-Von. Well, I guess they're no longer the Dudleys, but Bubba and D-Von came out and they did a promo. And of course, you know, Bubba's being a coward in the aisle, and D-Von is challenging him to a fight. And Taz is trying to be the mediator and telling Bubba, you know, Bubba had called Taz washed up, and Taz is like, you know, I am washed up, but still, he ain't challenging me. He's challenging you, so get in the ring. And they just had this awesome segment. And I was so in love with this segment. I was like, this is the best thing TNA has done in, like, months. This is the best Impact segment in months. And the show's over, and I did my show on the website at WrestlingObserver.com, and I'm talking about this segment and how awesome it is. And Vinny and I are actually getting excited about this pay-per-view. And we're like, I actually am excited to buy the show because I can't wait to see Bubba versus D-Von and this and that and the other thing. And then the next day I wake up and I've got emails and people have posted on the board and they've noted, Brian, you realize this match isn't on the pay-per-view. And I was like, what? And I went and checked, and in fact, the best segment on Impact in months was building up a match that's not even on the pay-per-view today. I could not believe it. That is what made me upset about this afternoon.
Wait. You couldn't believe that out of TNA?
I actually could. In this case, I actually could not believe that.
Sounds like something that would have been better served to have, like, you know, on the reaction show, and then have something next week after the pay-per-view to build up the match.
Yeah, I just was... As soon as I heard that match wasn't on the show, I was like, why am I buying this show? Other than the fact that it's my job. Seriously, why am I buying this show? I was so angry. Let's run down the matches. It is Jeff Hardy and Matt Morgan. Classic TNA. They had a match last month. It was no good, and nobody cared. And so their solution was, let's air it again.
But we have Mr. Anderson as the special guest referee that Matt Morgan decided upon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, all right, what's your swerve meter at for tonight for TNA?
Oh, my swerve meter is that something happens to Mr. Anderson, which, of course, defeats the purpose of him being out there, but maybe someone comes and distracts him. Maybe he gets hit with a chair again, because that's kind of what they do. But the young referee, as Ric Flair called him, Jack Daniels, the young referee comes down and blatantly screws Matt Morgan and is revealed to be part of Fortune, even though Fortune has beaten the crap out of him week after week on television. Why? Because it would make no sense! Therefore, it's going to happen.
Well, I'll one-up you then. Have not only that happen, but have Mr. Anderson turn because, you know, he's an a-hole, you know. And he can turn, he can come back and do that, and there you go. So it's Matt Morgan and Mr. Anderson for next month.
You know, like, normally I would just say there's absolutely no chance of that happening because Mr. Anderson is the one babyface they've got. But I thought that about Jeff Hardy, and they turned him. So I put nothing past them, but... I would predict that that will not happen in this match. That's just my prediction. Motor City Machine Guns and Generation Me in a TLC match for the tag titles. They did this exact same match on Impact, except they added two other teams, Mirror Money and Ink Inc. on Impact. So basically, you're paying $44.95 for less.
Well, and yes, you've also seen, you know, enough of it over the last couple weeks on Impact and Reaction too, where, yeah, I mean, they've kind of exhausted it before now, but, well, you know, that was all to set up the number one contenders match tonight between Beer Money and Ink Inc.
I was amazed that on Reaction, they actually blew off this feud. They had the babyfaces absolutely destroy the heels, and somehow that led to a TLC match. How? I have absolutely no earthly idea.
Do they have, like, a calendar that they're actually using to, like, pencil thing in from, like, 3 years ago where they just kind of, like, screw up on the ending date of these things? I mean, could that be the reason?
I think they just have a calendar that's backwards.
Like Abyss and the Pope?
Yeah. Abyss and the Pope are having a casket match today, everybody. Why are they having a casket match? I have
Because there needs to be a gimmick for this. Because how much have they hyped this up of, you know... Where's the Pope? Shouldn't the Pope still be emotional over his family turning on him for the dollars?
No, he was angry for one day, and it's been dropped.
Exactly.
Yeah, a casket
match.
And
he can trust everyone else in the company now, like teaming up last week. I mean, and I'm not saying they have killed him dead as a cool character, but they've almost killed him dead as a cool character.
I mean, at least with, like, Undertaker and Kane, it's like their gimmicks involve death and caskets. What does a casket have to do with the Pope? Or Abyss.
And whatever you could do, you could play it up, but no, they haven't done that. Again, why wasn't that hyped up a little bit more instead of having 3D? Good question.
And by the way, I should note that I expect Motor City Machine Guns and Generation Me to have a great match. Don't get me wrong. If you're here just for great wrestling action, that's going to be a good one. I don't see how it could not be. Also, what should be a good match, unless TNA decides to stick their hands into it, AJ Styles and Doug Williams. First time I saw these guys was 2001, King of the Indies. They're both much better now. They should be able to have an outstanding match. Whether they will or not depends entirely on whether TNA decides that they're going to book something here or have some sort of wacky finish or something like that. It is for the television title, for those of you that care, being defended on pay-per-view here. So, yeah, I'm hoping for good things out of that one.
Yeah, it's the only thing that they could really do to kill it outside of a craptastic ending, would be just cutting it too short. And it'll be too short anyway with some of the other stuff on here I wouldn't want to see, where it's like, God, I wish you would have gave Doug Williams more time. But I'm actually going with Doug Williams winning the TV title.
Robbie E. and Jay Lethal, X title. Cookie is going to be suspended above the ring in a shark cage. Why? I have no idea.
It's Sunday.
Sunday. That's a good answer. It's because the pay-per-view is on a day that ends with the word day. That's why it's being done. What'd you think of the fist pump challenge?
You know, much like everything in TNA, it went on for too long, and it's too bad it couldn't have been tighter. With that said, at least they got that one right in that, you know, and again, it's one of those stupid wrestling things that, yeah, you see it coming from a mile away. You know exactly what's going to happen in all likelihood. But sometimes you can do that and it works. You don't have to swerve it up. Jay Lethal, it was time for him to pump his fist. He pumps it and then smacks it right into Robbie E's mouth.
I was amazed because I was watching it when they first began. I loved the segment, actually. That was two segments on Impact this week I loved. And it's going to be a fist pump challenge. Jay Lethal looks like he wants nothing to do with this. Robbie E just does the most ridiculous fist pumping dance you ever saw. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, you know, this is so easy to do. All you do is you have the heel act like a complete idiot. And it's a babyface's turn and he does a fist pump into the heel's face. Easy. I was so confident that they were going to screw this up. Like, I was like, I couldn't even conceive that they would do it right. And then they did! So yeah, I thought it was a great segment.
Now, what about it dragging out with Robbie E getting the advantage there at the end? How did this match turn out then?
I just accept that stuff now.
Well, that's...
We're going to head to the break here.
I say Robbie E wins, though.
Yeah, we're going to head to a break. We'll talk about this match and more when we come back. We got more to preview, and we'll do some emails. Wrestling Observer Live, everybody. Sports Byline Radio Network. Back here on Wrestling Observer Live, Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. Joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. What a coincidence. Here talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next 20 minutes. If you love the show, WrestlingObserver.com. Go there. That's all I'm going to say for the plug. I've just worn myself out.
I was going to say, these are the only moments of the show that don't, you know, include high blood pressure the way it's gone. It's just coming back from break, and I think it'll be patently obvious to everyone when it's just like, still, you're choking on the bile that's up in the back of your throat.
Actually, the TNA fans should be happy because I have ranted and raved with such passion about judging and Chael Sonnen and Strikeforce that I have nothing left to rant about Impact. So it's getting off easy. The TNA pay-per-view is getting off easy today. So let's continue this preview. Jarrett Samoa Joe submission match. I feel they've screwed this up. Jeff Jarrett has. I thought it was great when it started, when he was tapping out children, and he'd always hit somebody with a gimmick and then put him in a hold. Now he's actually, like, doing a submission wrestler gimmick, and it's made the whole thing stupid. But I expect Joe to beat him here. I could be wrong. Maybe this feud must continue, and so they'll do the whole thing where Jarrett hits him again and taps him out. I don't know. But I don't expect great things out of this match.
No, I don't either. And yeah, like you said, I mean, just the way they've kind of messed this up of just have him just be a goofball in doing it instead of actually trying to work hard to, you know, put on a set of moves or a series of moves, which has just been absolutely ridiculous. I mean, he's played it up as a joke on Reaction anyway of, you know, cutting weight and all that stuff during the Thanksgiving segment and obviously playing the tape, which was absolutely hilarious. But why is he just not, you know, chicken ass throughout this whole thing? I have no clue, but I would assume just because it's Samoa Joe, Jarrett wins.
A couple more here, then I just realized we've got a million emails, so we're gonna have to get into it. Rob Van Dam and Rhino First Blood. Why? Just because they need a stip. I don't think either guy cares. It'll be an average match.
No, and they haven't done a good job driving that home too. I mean, they did a little bit, but you know, Rhino and Dreamer about when Rhino had to save his job and all that stuff. But they didn't do. They could have actually had something, you know, even though it would have been just a match, and you really need to have a First Blood stipulation. I mean, that's another one they didn't do a good job in really trying to drive home.
Beer Money and Ink Inc. and Mickey James and Tara. One's a tag match. One's Falls Count Anywhere. I actually expect the girls' match to be really good, and Beer Money and Ink Inc. could be pretty good as well. Don't know if they're selling pay-per-views, but should be good matches.
That's actually, you know, Falls Count Anywhere, but they've, you know, extended the brawls in the crowd and in backstage and all that. Those have gone on for way, way too long, and hopefully no one gets hurt in this.
Yeah, we got to get to emails here, but I just realized we haven't even talked about King of the Ring. There's a million stories.
Oh, wait, isn't that a WCW thing from Impact, too? And no offense, and I know it was an angle and she got jumped at the end of it by Tara, but no more live music on wrestling shows for any reason. Please, period, please.
Yeah, well, what can you do? All right, let's do some more news here quickly, then we'll get into the emails. Sheamus, King of the Ring. It was the not the highlight, actually, of the show, as Jerry Lawler and Miz in a TLC match was so awesome. And what'd you think of that show?
That was when they announced it, and it was just like, you know, I'm sitting there after Sheamus won King of the Ring, and it's like, I think there was still like another like 15 minutes left. Because I was just thinking of, and I love Jerry Lawler, and I love it when they break him out to do matches, you know, every once in a while, but it blew my mind when I'm sitting there looking, it's like 15 minutes plus an overrun. Jerry Lawler is 60-something years old. He's going to be in a TLC match against The Miz.
I thought the exact same thing I thought way back when they announced it was going to be Edge and Ric Flair in TLC. I was like, what? Edge and Ric Flair in a TLC match? Ric Flair's never been in a ladder match in his life. And because he's Ric Flair and he's just awesome, they had an amazing match. And it was the same thing with Lawler. I thought, wait a second. Lawler?
But Flair's a psychopath. I mean, Lawler didn't take bumps in 1985.
No! Lawler and Miz and TLC, you've got to be kidding me. How are they going to get out of this? They didn't get out of it. They did the match, and it was great.
That was just, I don't know. Maybe it was like having Jim Ross back to do commentary a couple weeks ago. And it's, again, as weird and disjointed and as, you know, strange as this thing ended on what they're going to do with it. I mean, just the match itself was, again, for a TV match with a 61-year-old dude, it was really something else. And just, again, The Miz's mouth carries him along incredibly well, too, where it was very, very good.
Jumping to the emails here, we might get into some more news after a bit, but we got to get into some of these. Why is it that recently almost all tag teams have been broken up when it seemed the WWE was trying to elevate the tag titles and make a real effort with the division? Well, the main reason is because Vince changes his mind all the time. Vince is not a fan of tag teams. But sometimes he gets behind a team or he has an idea for an angle that involves a team, and so he gets behind it for a while. And then it goes back to the way it was, which was kind of funny because one of Vince's favorite wrestlers, Jerry Graham, was a tag team wrestler back in the day. So why he hates tag teams, I have absolutely no idea. Probably because Jerry Graham's not involved.
Well, I mean, that was the thing. I mean, he always had Sweet Hansen around, it seemed like, and he was a tag team with Rip Hawk and the Carolinas for years. I mean, I don't get what it is. I understand that you're trying to drive a single star, so breaking them up too quick, but why even have tag titles at all? I mean, just have some random tag matches every once in a while or something like that. And WCW did that, too, with Bischoff. I mean, I guess they'll go back to it. It'll be cyclical again, and they'll do it again for a short period of time. But he just looks at individual singles dudes that can get on other TV shows.
This person said, I heard Cena mention that Kidman was in the back during his retirement promo. Is there anyone else like this working backstage who are also talented they could do with this? If the WWE is short on talent, why not put someone like Kidman in the ring now for the sake of good matches and getting guys over? I don't know how good Kidman is right now. He was out of the ring for a long time. He got a lot heavier. This is not, let's just put it this way, this is not the WCW Kidman who's working in the back right now.
No, yeah, no shooting star presses coming off of him. And the thing is, I don't think they need to do that as far as have matches in the ring like that. I mean, every once in a while, yes. It's utilizing those guys. I mean, look at all those ex-wrestlers that live in Florida. I mean, have them, and again, it's just because of how fast they want to pull guys up. Drew McIntyre was working with Ricky Steamboat. They could do that, and you know, in theory, for that time, it made Drew McIntyre better. It exactly hasn't panned out too well, but like they're going to bring back Tough Enough. You know, have these old guys, have them working with them down there and working longer with them down there. I mean, that's why I thought The Miz working with Lawler was a really good, you know, a smart thing to do, but they need to utilize those guys better in training, and they need to keep these guys in training for a lot longer.
Michael here says, when will there be video footage of the Briscoe brothers training Papa Briscoe and grappling for Final Battle? I don't know, but hopefully soon. Yes.
God, please.
God, that would be awesome. All right, this person here says, although The Miz won't likely be champion going into WrestleMania, do they have any plans for him as of yet? Jericho could be the perfect opponent for him, as WWE may have a hard time keeping Jericho as a heel with so many of the established stars leaving this year. All I know is they were going to have him do the feud with Orton. It's been planned for a while. I don't know if they planned on him being champion past Rumble. These plans, everybody, they change like daily. They change based on how much merchandise happened to be sold during a particular week, or the lack of merchandise being sold during a week. They can be changed based on one match, based on one promo, based on someone else's promo. It's plans nowadays are not set in stone until they are actually, until like something has been done on TV where you have to keep that direction, like Undertaker and Shawn at the Slammies. Other than that, nothing is guaranteed.
When are the Slammies coming?
Next week.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, another 3-hour Raw next week, everybody. Mm-hmm. All right. Can you shed any light on the undisclosed condition that is keeping Nigel McGuinness / Desmond Wolf off of TV and out of action? Heard mysterious rumblings, and that some people know but don't want to say for whatever reason. I know that he has friends that he has not told, so, you know, I don't know if really anyone knows, to be honest with you. I don't know. So he should be back soon, maybe even tonight, actually.
Well, that's the thing. He was hinted at for a while anyway, too. So I guess, you know, you obviously have the number one tag match or the number one contenders tag match. I don't know if you could drag back Brutus and Nigel for that or whatever they would do. But, yeah, they supposedly are coming back soon.
How much longer is this Edge holding Paul Bear hostage angle going to last? It's really getting ridiculous. Yes.
Getting?
It sucks.
I mean, the turning back of time this year to do, you know, the raising people back from the dead and caskets and what Edge is doing now. I mean, it is awful. It's not even campy good. It's not good. So I don't know how long they'll do it for, but hopefully not much longer. If they can figure a way out, hopefully it happens. Somebody had said, like, they think it's going to go on for a couple more matches. I'm not sure who that was, but just remember my ears started to burn after that.
Maybe they'll...
This is really bad.
Instead of hanging the belt above the ring in the TLC match, they can hang Paul Bearer.
Paul Bearer on a forklift match?
Sure. And also, is Triple H coming back soon? I thought he'd be back last Monday, but I now expect him to be back this Monday to feud with the new King.
It may not even be this week, but I mean, at some point they're probably going to have to sell a pay-per-view. I'm not sure when the next one is after this as far as the time goes. But yeah, definitely in the next 2 weeks. I mean, doesn't make any sense. Again, it wasn't rocket science on Monday. You know, the King of Kings going after the current king.
All right. This person here says, how long do you think TNA would have to sink before Panda Energy pulled the plug? Surely they can't be turning a profit considering the low buy rate and the expensive talent contracts. No, they are not turning a profit. And in fact, Dixie's mom is now in charge of okaying new... basically, she's in charge of finances, and everything has to go through her. So corners are drastically being cut. They are not just signing people left and right like they were in the past. And
so she was one that figured out that Hulk Hogan didn't have any authority to sign anybody.
Apparently.
Hmm.
Do you see any possibility at all that WWE tries to make CM Punk a full-time commentator? He is full-time until he comes back in January, and he will be wrestling when he can wrestle again. Let's just put it that way.
Hopefully he just stays a color commentator, too.
Yeah. Stumbling through... Let's see. While stumbling around Go Fight Live, I saw an upcoming pay-per-view presented by a professional stand-up fighting promotion called Instinct Fighting. They call themselves the Future of Fighting. The catchline seems to be, same exciting action as mixed martial arts, but when the fight hits the ground, the fighters immediately stand up. No ground, just pound! What do you think of the concept? Have you ever heard about Instinct Fighting, and do you think this concept could become a niche market? Yes, it's called kickboxing.
It's called Tough Man, possibly, too. I mean, my instinct, if I was be put on the ground, would be, you know, snatch the other guy's leg up or something like that. I don't know. A lot of this stuff that airs on there's a lot of smaller MMA promotions and boxing cards and things like that that, you know, again, if you can just broker however many, you know, $1,000, I'm not sure exactly how much it would be to actually do that. But, You know, there's been a bunch of those that have popped up, and just, again, doesn't seem like a concept right now. I mean, people like mixed martial arts. If people like kickboxing, you know, it's had some ups and downs, but it's never been truly up where it's really registered as far as sport goes. So, yeah, I mean, as much as you want to talk about amateur wrestling not having a foothold and being boring on the ground, I mean, it's the same thing with kickboxing and right now with boxing. People like MMA, give them full-fledged MMA.
Person wants to know about Kid Cash. Said there were any plans of re-signing him as he was really over during the match and showed he still had it. I don't know what happened with Kid Cash. I know that in the past he'd gotten criticisms for his attitude, and it seems odd that he would have looked as, I mean, he was a little heavy, but he looked good in the ring, and they did not use him for EV2, so I don't know what happened. So I can't answer that question, but that is interesting. All right, we're going to head to a break right here. Got a couple of questions left. Might jump into one of them when we come back from the break. But until then, we'll be right back, everybody. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We're back here for the final segment on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Do a couple more questions here before we wrap it up. We got a ton of them today. This one's for you, Mike. Been watching a lot of the 90s All Japan lately and doing research online. I've learned that this style of wrestling is called King's Road. Could you please compare and contrast this with Strong Style, which I thought is what All Japan was?
Yeah, see, to me, it was Strong Style either way, but the you know, the UWFI stuff and, you know, the Kensuke Sasaki, and it was, you know, that was Strong Style. The other one was down King's Road, and to be honest, I mean, with the amount of punishment all of those guys took, it was all kind of Strong Style.
Let's do one more here before we wrap it up. What's the latest on Shane McMahon? Do you think he'll come back to WWE eventually if he can't get anything off the ground? I mean, if he can't get anything off the ground, I think he might want to come back. But he is a member of the McMahon family. He's loaded. He does not need to really do anything he doesn't want to do. And I think that as long as the business is being run the way it's being run, I don't think he's going to be coming back. That's one of the main reasons that he left was... he did not feel he was being well utilized. I don't know why that would change, especially with Triple H getting a promotion, Vince's new right-hand man, Stephanie still in the position of power. I mean, he'd be in the same spot he was in before, so I don't see him coming back to that. But you never know. Anything can happen. I mean,
he's got other business interests, too, where his money now can make money, and he can just go and, you know, work on deals without having to actually, like, you know, be on TV or have that sort of, you know, high-pressure situation.
That's about it for today, everybody. Want to apologize for ranting and raving so much. Happens sometimes. Of course, the TNA pay-per-view is about to start. So over at WrestlingObserver.com, Dave's going to be doing a live running commentary on the show. So if you get the show, you might want to check that out, see what Dave is thinking of the same matches you're watching. If you don't get the show, you can head over there and get the results. And of course, later tonight, Dave and I are going to be back. Brand new radio show. If you love this show, got another one coming up tonight, WrestlingObserver.com. Consider signing up, $10.99 a month. Full access to every brand new show we do, every archived show, and all of the newsletters. Wrestling Observer Newsletter, Figure Four Weekly, and of course, Admin Mike, Big Audio Nightmare with our buddy Mike Sempervivi. So, talk to you again next week, everybody. Thanks for listening. Listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network.